Great to welcome in Daisy Pearce, part of the SEN family. Good to see you, Daisy.
Morning, BP. Hey, Dal.
Hi, Daisy. How are you doing?
Yeah, good.
You look fresh. You look fresh. How are you feeling post a, I won't say a long season, but post a rigorous season?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, it's not a long season in length, but the same amount of work and emotional build-up and intensity goes into it. So it's almost more exhausting, I think, because it's crammed into those 7 weeks. So it is a bit of a come-down, but... No, we're through the award season now. We had the trifecta this week, the MVP Monday, AFLW Awards Tuesday, and then our BNF Wednesday. So nice celebration of the season, although we sort of finish up with that sense that we didn't quite achieve what we set out to and a little bit of bitterness. But, yeah, bottle that up and looking forward to building up into next year.
Just a summary of those three nights being the awards nights, you all roughly went to plan?
I think so, yeah. Oh, MVP, I mean, she would have been in the mix, but it was a great surprise to have Courtney Gumm win the AFLPA MVP. She's 36 years old, overlooked in last year's draft, had been living in Adelaide and has her own physio business and raising a family in Adelaide, but took the plunge and a risk and took up an opportunity with GWS, moved over there, lived in a tent in a family member's front yard for a couple of weeks just to get herself going. So the ultimate sacrifice and was turning up to training, you know, saying things to her coach from what I've heard as if she might not get picked the next week. And she goes on to win the MVP, which was great, really popular winner. The thing I love about MVP and you'd know when you get to vote on these awards, It's taking into account all the things we value in a footballer, not just kicks, marks, physical attributes, what they do with ball in hand, but it's considering all the other things and the important things that happen in and around that. So I love that she won it and, you know, great reward for that sacrifice. And then Tuesday night, Emma Carney has probably been the standout player in the comp, and I was talking to Jared about Emma yesterday. I think she's a great advertisement for where the improvement in this competition can come from and how quickly it can happen. I mean, we often talk about, you know, give it 2-3 years, the kids coming through the pathway are going to be great. But Emma just goes to show that, I mean, she's been a dominant player at VFL level for about 8 years now, playing at Melbourne University and terrorising us when we've played against them. But, you know, her improvement in one season, just from exposing her to that elite environment, great coaching and all the support that you need to be the best that you can be, just goes to show that week on week, year on year, us old dogs can improve as well. And I've felt
never
that
stop
also.
Stop improving.
So
I like
she's,
that.
She's done a lot of work on her defensive side of her game, her kicking, and just she was like a new player this year. And that goes to say something. She's been a great player for a long time. So that was good. And Chloe Malloy too. That points to where that improvement's going to come from in the junior ranks. First year in the system, 19 years old, took out the Rising Star, which we all expected, but second in the BNF as well.
It's
pretty impressive.
Who was the MVP afterwards, Daze?
Oh, wasn't me.
Was there a
because
standout?
I'd left, so it wasn't me. Darcy Vessio, actually, Carlton, and I've played with her at Darabin for years. She's always a standout. Some very interesting dance moves, which anyone at the Brownlow last year, she attended the Brownlow and Brownlow after party last year as well. So they're not confined to the women's football space. She, pulled them out that night
good
as well.
Her.
But no, I reckon she would have been close to BOG.
9429 1116 if you want to weigh in. Got a couple of bamboozled socks to give away, Del. I need to just sort of upgrade my sock department. Navy blue, the flamingos on them. They take socks to a whole new level. Got a couple of those to give away. 9429 1116
Coming back into sock weather too.
Yeah, excellent.
The warm, long sock.
I think Gary Lyon might be able to maybe sport a couple of pairs of socks. He has not
just
worn socks all summer.
No, yeah.
Have you noticed that, Dave?
He
What's your thoughts on that?
He cops it, though. I've been analysing the sock set up, and he often has to sit on the edge.
Yeah.
So he plays a tough role at Fox Footy. So some get to hide behind the desk in the middle. But Gaz is always on the edge. So, you know, he's exposed more than other people on the station, I think. So, yeah. Go easy on him.
Plays
a tough role.
Yeah, he's tough. Before we get you to weigh in on the footy, I just wanted to quickly touch on, I was mentioning to Del during the break, I did some work many years ago with Fitzroy, with Alan McConnell when he was coach, and I was going on the Giants' website last night because I'm doing their game tomorrow, but I listened to his speech at the AFL, at their best and fairest during the week, and talking about Courtney Gumm and the great story, but the situation they're in where the depth of talent in New South Wales, you know, obviously is still a little bit behind some of the other states, but I think there's a young girl from Vanuatu who is coming in. It looks like a really likely type of player, but they're having to think outside the square in terms of the build of their list and the type of list they put together. Now, obviously, they improved this year on their first year in AFLW, but for every side, it's a sort of different set of circumstances, isn't it, to try and build a competitive list in the AFLW and with two new teams coming in.
Yeah, it is, and I mean, that's reflective of where the competition's at in terms of not as many participation numbers. You can be pretty creative in terms of where you get your talent from, but each team's quite unique in how they set that up. Like you say, we're still at a stage where the drafts are state-based, so rather than it be a national draft where you can pick from any pool of talent, it's tricky because to lure someone to move states is hard when it's only a 6-month contract and not quite enough to justify financially or be able to support yourself financially to make that move based on your contract. So GWS is an interesting case, as I haven't heard about the girl from Vanuatu, but let me know. I'll let our Melbourne recruiters know if it's worth it, if she hasn't signed yet. But no, and another one too, Cora Staunton, who Irish woman, absolute sporting champion over in Ireland. She's played in I don't know how many All Ireland teams in their Gaelic football competition. Dominant, actually.
Got a big rap from Alan.
Yeah, and back in 2006, it was the 150th year of Gaelic football in Ireland. So they funded a one-off Australian women's team to come over and play against their women's team. I was 18 years old and got to play in the side, the youngest member of the team. Cora Staunton played against us, and she was incredible. So just so strong, could kick a Gaelic football about 60 metres through the goals.
Wow.
So when I saw that name pop up in AFL circles, I was worried and I knew she was going to be good. But it is interesting. Another interesting one, BP, is Adelaide, who are still in this phase where I think about 8, 9, maybe 10 of their girls are from Darwin. So they've got a shared arrangement because Darwin don't have a team. They're tapping into their talent. And they do video conferencing, train separately as a group, and then travel and meet together before the game and go out and put the Adelaide jumper on and away they go.
Which makes it extraordinary in year one.
Yeah, their success.
Come together and
great
flag.
Effort.
Indeed. So I think we're, about 2 or 3 weeks away. Gillon McLachlan speaking in Sydney this week as to what 2019 will look like. So obviously there's a lot of discussions going on behind the scenes. Interesting with the news yesterday regarding tennis now going on to Channel 9. That's from 2020. That'll take place. But obviously the question being asked is, you know, does the AFLW start a little bit earlier to try and get that standalone grand final weekend games? Is there a possibility of having a final series? So a lot being weighed up at the moment.
Yeah, there is. And Steve Hocking and Nicole Livingston, the new kind of head of female football, brought us together during the week on Monday to kind of share our views on where we think the competition could go. So it was an open invite to any players to come along and a bit of an open forum and vent session and ideas, brainstorming things.
How'd it go? What's your take on all that sort of stuff? And how much do you think that the head of AFLW and then Steve Hocking, who's overseeing it and doing a great job in my opinion, how much is your voice heard and then taken into consideration?
Well, I think that's been one of our I should only speak for myself, although I know I'm not alone. It's been one of our frustrations with some of the rule changes and adjustments and differences that have been applied to women's footy or AFLW, is that it's been hard to see the journey that they've gone on to land at that decision or make that rule change. And it certainly doesn't feel like we've been kind of brought in on that journey. So regardless of what your view is on whether there should be differences and changes and adjustments, I think I'll feel better about it regardless of what happens, because I get a true sense that Steve is going to listen to us and bring us in on that. So I think that's great. And another thing that I'd say about Steve Hocking, and I've been one of these people, and there'll be a big group of people that don't want anything to change about women's football because we want to play the same as the men's. But the thing about Stephen Hocking is he's innovative and going to be disruptive, and he's going to make changes across the whole industry. So it's gone from me feeling like women's footy is going to be used as a guinea pig to it's just his approach. And he's going to, you know, shake things up across the whole game. And we're seeing that already in some of the changes he's made in men's football. So that too makes me feel a bit better that it's not a token thing or that he thinks that it's not valued. It's just he's going to be innovative about both games in their own different way. So, yeah, I walked away with a pretty good feeling and feeling like our voice will be heard.
Fair bit to be unveiled over the next few weeks. Daisy Pearce in the studio with us. It's 17 past 8. We want you to weigh in on what is going to be a massive Easter weekend. Started with Adelaide's big win last night, which we've dissected a fair bit. So you can certainly give us a thought on that, and you and Nick can pull it apart. But also looking ahead to what is going to be a massive Good Friday clash today. A bit on the line for both North Melbourne and St Kilda.
Yeah, there is. I just want to rewind back to last night and get your opinion on this, Daisy. You've been so successful as a player. Can you give us some insight into when you win a premiership and then how that flows on to the hangover, but also the other side? Because there's so many questions about whether Adelaide can bounce back and the disappointment of losing a grand final. What's almost more difficult to come back from the following season, winning and having a good 6 months off-season, or losing and the disappointment?
Oh, I think they've both got advantages and also their own challenges. And we'd been very successful at Darebin at VFLW level, and I almost found the success addictive. So it felt that good, and just the feeling of, you know, going through a difficult season, getting to the top of the mountain and then celebrating that with your teammates. It was so addictive that I'd just turn away from the season thinking, I want to do everything I can to get back to that feeling. And I think you have to be quite honest with yourself and be pretty true about where you can improve and assessing things. So, yeah, it's a combination of enjoying the success and wanting to get back there, but, yeah, looking for ways that you can improve and being realistic about the fact that people are going to hate you and want to get back at you and find ways to beat you. And then on the flip side, having come into AFLW, I've missed out and you know, been quite disappointed with the way the last two seasons have ended, and that's been extremely motivating as well. I know throughout the pre-season leading into this year, it drove the feeling of those disappointments drove me through all the hard training sessions. I'd be doing a bike session or a run that no one was watching during pre-season and thinking, you know, when you, I mean, naturally you feel like giving up at times and you think to yourself, no one's going to know whether I finished this last set or not, so I might just leave it at that. But I'd use little analogies like, oh, this is the last quarter of the GWS game that we were terrible in. If I had my second chance at that, how would I treat it? And that's how I'd approach my training. So both are very motivating. I think for Richmond, Bulldogs almost didn't want to use the word premiership hangover. They were in denial about it for half the season.
They were hungover.
Whereas Richmond sort of came out and I think have been a bit more forthright with it and said that it could be a thing. And there's been a lot of talk about having to re-establish their brand and that they're back at the bottom of the mountain. So I don't see last night as a hangover.
Oh, some outstanding work being done during the break here.
We might just, we'll keep those conversations. It was me, it wasn't you, Dave.
Impersonations to a T. 9:14, 9:11, 9:16, Brett Phillips, Nick Delsanto. Daisy Pearce joining us in this half hour as we head up to 9 o'clock on this Good Friday. Good Friday footy from 3 o'clock, Test Match Cricket from 6:30 on Classic Rock tonight across to SEN from 7:30 with Jack Heveron, Adam Voges and Adam Collins. Going to be a fascinating day. The opening day of the fourth test in Johannesburg. But, Daisy, while we've got you in the studio, we need to look ahead. What's the pick? What do you like from the weekend ahead? There are so many sort of mouthwatering matchups out there.
I keep harping on about the Geelong-Hawthorn game, and I know we have to wait till Monday to get there, but I'm looking forward to that one. I think the Cats were pretty impressive last week. I mean, you could argue that they maybe should have lost the game against the Dees with Max Gawn having the shot to beat them. But to blood three youngsters and get away with a win while you're missing, I went to automatically say top line midfielder in danger, but now that Ablett's there, maybe you don't say that anymore. But for them to get away with a win against what's considered the Melbourne boys are fancied this year to make finals and maybe go deeper than that.
Yep.
One of the better midfields in the comp, albeit missing Jack Viney. But, yeah, I thought they were pretty impressive.
Don't you already get the feeling that every week's a big week? And we often compare it, and we're sometimes trying to make it too much like the NFL, a 16-game season, therefore every game has more emphasis and importance. But I already feel, Days, I feel like you can almost lock in six teams to play finals, and therefore there's only two spots for the remaining top eight, that there's games already that are happening that if you don't win that...
Finals yeah.
That if you don't win that game against someone that's in a similar position or expected to be in a similar position, it almost puts you back a run already. And, I mean, there's some matchups that I'm like Collingwood GWS. Like, that's just a great game because it's got so much story around it and where it all sits. I'm excited. I'm doing the game Sydney versus Port Adelaide.
That's another tantalising one, I think.
Who wins that and why, Daze?
Oh, I think Sydney. I thought they were impressive last week as well. That was an awesome game up there against West Coast. But just their ability, contested ball. But I think something they've added is the speed of ball movement that probably hasn't been the hallmark of Sydney in their successful years through the JLT and last week. Their offence has really quickened up.
Can they do that on a smaller SCG? Can Buddy be the same presence? And they try to isolate him a little bit at times, give him a bit of space. Can he do that at the SCG?
Well, maybe they go back to their one wood a little bit more at the SCG, but they'll still get opportunities to do so. I think they've been very, very hard to beat at the SCG, but with a few more tricks and tactical things that they haven't tried before, like the Buddy a bit deeper. I mean, you can still create that a little bit. At the SCG, you get it in quickly and suddenly it's one kick out of the middle instead
of... it's one kick from the full back line as well.
And they've got this miserly defence, Port Adelaide. I saw it live last week. And they're not, you know, big names. I mean, Jonas, Houston, Cleary. I mean, Homps just still got to come back into the team who's out injured at the moment. Rolly Bonner won the Rising Star. Great drive off half-back. Hamish Hartley, we know, kicks the ball beautifully. Yes. Byrne Jones gives him that run, but... when you talk about the tools of that defence, they just don't give you anything.
And I think that's why this game in particular, we'll get a good look at how genuine Port Adelaide are. I think we saw last year they preyed on the not-so-good teams because their defence, which I think are probably their weakness or had been last year, that didn't get tested against the weaker sides. So they can just play front half footy and dominate against the lesser sides. This is how far is this back line that you mentioned, BP? How far has it come and will it stand up against the better sides?
We speak about Port beating teams that aren't in great form. They actually got Sydney up there round one and one by 28 points. And we know how Sydney started the season. So there's a lot of questions within that. What about Paddy Ryder? How big a out is that? Not only for his ability, but if they can replace someone of his capabilities and what he can provide for the mids.
Oh, it's a big out. There's not a lot underneath him. I think the three actual ruckmen that are on the Port Adelaide list, I can't even think of their names off the top of my head, but none of them have played AFL footy.
Yeah, Sam Hayes got drafted last year, highly regarded. I don't know if any of those backup ruckmen, that they might have two or three on their list.
Billy Frampton's one, I think.
Mm-hmm. You'd expect this West off has to be a bit more competitive. And I also have heard that Ollie Wines has practiced this ruck role a little bit similar to the Sean Grigg. And we take the mickey out of the size of his legs, but good luck trying to move that.
Oh,
on the Sean absolutely. Grigg one, we spoke to him post-match last week and I asked him how much ruck work he does during the week. So he's the backup ruckman of the reigning premiers and backup ruckman in a premiership year. He said none, and a couple of times he's tried to stick his head in, I think it's Ivan Marich is the ruck coach. He told him to get out, go away. So that he does none.
They obviously put a massive emphasis on that then, Daze, the importance of the backup ruckman.
Natural ability. But it'll be interesting. He might be in there a bit more this week after. That's what true. Did you think of the Nankervis? I think I've got a different view to most.
Which way are you going? Are you saying guilty or not guilty?
No,
now?
I think not guilty.
Because he didn't touch him.
Well... last night, I think people were a bit unhappy with the look of the act. But to me, I just saw a big, lumbering, clumsy ruckman who can't change his mind as quickly as what...
Oh, so you're saying he's a bit slow mentally then?
No, all ruckmen are, aren't they? But no, he's come in, I think, to bump or tackle, which is a big part of his role in and around contest stoppage, is to make sure a Matt Crouch, who's a great contest-to-contest runner, doesn't have a free hit at the next contest. He's come in to bump or tackle. Matt Crouch actually goes to ground. I don't know how much he weighs, but it'd be 100+. I don't think he can pull out of that very quickly. And I actually think when you watch it, he does a very good job to make sure his knees don't dig into his back. He actually lifts them and tries to avoid it.
I think Nankervis... I didn't like the look of the act. I'm on that side of the fence. I thought it was a deliberate act that he didn't need to go to ground, but I think he may get off because I don't even know if the impact on Crouch was significant enough to be warranted a suspension, let's just say. And Crouch got up straight away. And we all know that a lot of it relies on the opponent and how much injury they occur. Or if they go off the ground, Crouch was fine. Apart from then doing his hamstring.
I actually think he ends up jumping to protect himself. He's worried about that below the knees contact and pulls out of it, I think.
I love it. Lots to look forward to. Sticking up for the players. I love it.
Right across the weekend, before we break, a couple of winners and wangers. We need to just touch on this for the week, Del. I've got one winner, and I'll just put my tennis hat on for a moment, but it is an unbelievable deal that Tennis Australia has done. $300 million, five-year deal, 2020 to 2024, the biggest in the history of the organisation. $60 million a year, more tennis content on free-to-air. So I'll give that a bit of a tick.
Can I go with a wanger?
You can.
Because I'm normally positive, and I love finding the good stories and celebrating the good players, Dace. But Jack Redpath, and I'm not blaming Jack Redpath for what's happened here, but if you haven't heard, so this is the scenario. Jack Redpath got suspended last year. Serves his whack of, I think it was 2 weeks. Mm. Served those 2 weeks for what he thought and the football club thought. But he played last week in a practice match in the VFL form or the seconds while the AFL round one was on. So therefore, it was deemed that that wasn't a weekend off. If it had been the previous week or 2 weeks ago when there was no AFL game on, it's fine. If he had played in an intra-club or an unorganised game, fine. But because they played against an opposition club, that was deemed to be actually playing on that weekend. The Bulldogs need some tall players. And I know they've got a lot on their list. So I think Jack Redpath would have been the first guy of that group that you would have brought in. So the AFL said, no, you haven't served your penalty yet. You need to have an additional week being this week. That's a wanger. I don't know. And Amit Baines, if you're listening, mate, I love you, buddy, but you've got to keep an eye on this.
For all
agreed.
Your attention to detail.
Stuff up. But I've got one. I've got a question for you, and you both have to answer honestly. Mm. If that's you, and I don't know how the sequence of this played out, but if you're the Bulldogs and you suddenly stumble across that, oh no, we've played this bloke in a state game and now we can't play AFL, do you A, come clean like they have, or I don't know how it played out. This might not be the way it read. Do you come clean and say, oh no, we've done the wrong thing. We've played him in a game the week before, so now he's unavailable for AFL, or do you say Jack Redpath out, virus?
BP, far away.
Well, I don't know. I'm with the events of the week in world sport.
Yeah,
I'm probably a come clean man. Yeah, to be totally honest.
Well said. It's just if it was last week, Dace, I might have had a different opinion. But as we've got the screens on in the background, I'm watching Steve Smith for the thousandth time this morning. I'd say I'd put my hand up straight away.
And this. Another point, off topic, but this is people are sitting back saying, how can Steve Smith be a great role model for kids now? This is it. I mean, not just kids, but he's shown that if you own your mistakes and come out and be honest, there is a place for forgiveness and moving on and second chances, I think.
Indeed. Hey, great to spend some time with you this morning. You'll be on the radio tomorrow along with Bob Murphy, Jared Waitley, Kevin Bartlett, Carlton and the Gold Coast from 1 o'clock. Look forward to it.
Thank you.